Welcome back in here to 95.7 KQWC. Sports Director Quinn Douglas here this morning, and on my right here in the studio, we have got a very special guest joining us in studio. He is the recently stepped down head football coach of the Webster City Lynx after 17 seasons, 47 overall. Coach Bob Howard joining me in the studio, and I did get a chuckle because you had to make sure, you know, obviously when we were discussing about getting this interview, you made sure to say you're not retired, and you say you're not, you don't know what you're going to do yet.
Well, everybody says I'm retired. That was what come out within an hour of the initial Twitter going out that I was retired and all the congratulations. And I appreciate the congratulations and all that stuff. I don't know if it's retired or at the time I thought I resigned. So, well, I guess I hope that I'm retired, that I can deal with it. But on the other hand, I hope that at some point maybe I am coaching somewhere or at some level again.
So. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I mean, as it stands right now, 47 years as the head coach, there's not a lot of people around that can say they've spent 47 years as a head football coach. And with that, obviously, you have to start somewhere. And for you, obviously, I don't know if a lot of people know, we share the same hometown of Madrid. And from there, you went to Central College. You were a football player and you were a track athlete. And obviously, you probably ran into a lot of people along the path that maybe set you on this course. And is there maybe a figure or two in your, you know, growing up and going into college that kind of set you on the course to become a coach?
Well, I grew up when we were still living in the town of Madrid down on Main Street. Coach Mills lived across the street from us.
And I've heard a lot about Coach Mills.
And his son, Paul, and Tim, and the Nardinis. We were all in that area. And Coach Mills used to, in the summertime, be out the park hitting us flies and playing home run derby with us. And I couldn't wait to get into high school to play for Coach Mills. And they left when I was in eighth grade. And that was one of the first things that really made an impression on me about the relationship that kids have with coaches. And I'll never forget. At Madrid High School, when we brought in Mr. Flynn and Mr. Huntington as our administrators, and Madrid was a little bit of a rough a rough place before that. They were actually in danger of losing their accreditation as a high school. And my dad went on the school board when they came in, along with Doc Leonard and two or three other people. I think that first year they didn't suspend, they expelled 8 or 10 kids. And I remember watching when I was in seventh grade, Coach Mills come out of the shop. He was the shop teacher. And everybody in school kind of feared the principal and the superintendent. Everybody, it was like the parting of the Red Sea with Coach Mills, but everybody said, hi, everybody. I mean, the level of respect and reverence for Coach, and that never left me, I guess. And the guy that replaced him, Coach Lowry, was a fantastic person, fantastic teacher, ended up being a great principal for years and years up at Nora Springs. He didn't have much talent to work with because I think we averaged 155 pounds with me at 240 in the line my senior year. I mean, they're just – but he taught me a lot about being a person. So obviously, those two were great influences. Coach Trost, who was an assistant coach when I was there, that was my head track coach, and then Coach Skipper at Central was a huge influence.
And from there, you obviously graduate from Central College. You move on. Your first job is down at Scranton, which is down in Greene County. For those that don't know, that's a part of the Greene County School District now. And Scranton, I mean, even when you were there, it was just this, you know, little old farm town right off of Highway 30, and you're there for three seasons. You take them to the playoffs in 1978. And what are some memories that stand out to you about that first job at Scranton all the way back in the late 70s?
Yeah, that was my first head job. My actual first job was at Perry.
Okay.
I was an assistant coach for 2 years at Perry, coached four sports at Perry, girls basketball and softball and track. And then Coach Lowry, my coach at Madrid, was the principal at Scranton. He hired me at Scranton, and he left before I got there. But it was a different time. You know, I've coached in, I ended up coaching in six decades, and there has been a little bit of change from the 1977 Scranton team, when I believe it was 45 or 47 boys in the whole high school, and it was either 31 or 33 of them were farm kids. We didn't have a weight in the building. We didn't need any weights. Mm-hmm. Most of the town kids worked out there. It was just, and it was back when if you told the kids to, you told them to do something, it was okay, coach. It wasn't mm-hmm. why. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that was a great thing, but that's the way it was. And we had unbelievable talent. If the coach would have known anything, that was a definite final two. We should have been playing for the state finals. We mm-hmm. we had four kids on that team that legitimately ran 4.5 40s. We ran 44.2 on grass in the 4x1.
Yeah,
and we had a lot of kids. But timing is everything, and I was there at the right time with mm-hmm. the right kids. They hadn't had any winning seasons before I got there. They bought into to what I was selling as far as buy-in, and that was without weight training and all the other stuff. Mm-hmm. But within, I think, 3 years after I left, they had already consolidated, and they didn't have a football team mm-hmm. anymore. Well, that's not true, because Bryce Pop was my ball boy, and he was a fifth grade.
Okay.
And yep. he did, I think, the last year he played – was at Scranton. I think his senior year, I think, was their last okay. year of football. So they lasted a few more mm-hmm. years, but their writing was definitely on the wall.
Mm-hmm. And Bryce Pop, all-pro linebacker in the 90s for the Green Bay Packers, and, of course, one of the more well-known football players to come out of the state back in the 90s. But I remember yep. a story you told me about your time in Scranton. You talked about, obviously, you were a track coach as well. You guys had a state champion hurdler, and you said you guys didn't own one hurdle in the whole school.
No, we had Kevin Scala, who's one of the greatest athletes I've ever coached, started for 3 years at tailback for South Dakota. And Kevin was probably 6'3", 215, and great football player, great basketball player. He set the state record in the low hurdles, and it had only been being run for like 3 or 4 years there in 1979. But, yeah. We didn't have a hurdle, and I had a different kid that ran 14.8 in the highs. Wayne Dobson ran 14.8, and I remember where Dennison first meet this. Boy, you guys must really have a heck of a hurdle program. I said, we sure do. We go out and run sprints on the street for 15 minutes, and we play basketball for 2 hours. I mean, I had a 53.5-foot shot putter. Mm-hmm. We threw off the road. We didn't have a shot put ring. And Scala was a 21-foot long jumper and a 6'4" high jumper.
Oh, man.
We didn't have a high jump. We had no track facilities mm-hmm. at all. And so, yeah, I had some athletes.
Yeah, it just goes to show back then when you had to, you know, make do with what you had. And you definitely, you had a lot of athletes that were able to do that. And I also remember having a conversation with you. Your offense obviously has been made well aware of. A lot of people call it the spinner back. Its legitimate name is the single wing, and it's been around the game of football for a long time. But you didn't always run the single wing, and especially when you were at Scranton, you said you weren't it was more of a, I don't want to say gimmick, but it was something you used kind of sparingly.
We used it when we were way ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And I had it in our back pocket in case our quarterback ever got hurt, but our quarterback's name was Mad Dog. That was his his nickname.
It's a good name to have.
And he was, because his idol was Mad Dog Harley Race, a professional wrestler.
A great professional wrestler, yes, yeah.
Yes, that was Mick Kohner, and Mick was fantastic, and he would play anywhere. We had one game we played him at fullback, and we ran the ball 72 times and didn't throw it once. The last game of his senior season, he missed the state record on a dropped 45-yard pass in the end zone at the end of the game against Central Webster. I mean, mm-hmm. Mick was a perfect spin back. I had all that speed. Yeah, we would have been, and we ran it as a kind of a goof around offense in practice, mm-hmm. but if we should have been running it there. Because that may have been the best backfield, one of the best backfields I'd ever had to do it.
And, you know, when did that change? When did you decide that the single wing offense, you know, I could run this as a legitimate system and have success with them? When did that change?
Well, we went to it in 1987. Mm-hmm. It was the year that we started sharing with Keota, when mm-hmm. Sigourney Keota became Sigourney Keota. And we played Iowa Valley, was ranked second in the state. We played them right off the bat. We'd run the wishbone and the eye and wing tee. But I always wanted to be different. We had a 5'7", 130-pound quarterback. And we ran the wishbone during our soap game because we played Iowa Valley first. and we scripted the whole thing, and we look like Oklahoma. I'd tell him where to stunt, and we'd run the fullback, and he'd go, and then I'd have him leave the quarterback. In other words, we knew Iowa Valley was scouting us. They did scout us, and we come out in the second play of the game. We ran on the single wing. We ran what we now call 4-32 crisscross. It's the inside handoff to the wing back, and Brady Brown went 75 yards, and nobody was in 20 yards of him. We beat him 22-20, basically with three quick kicks on third down that were going over real big with our crowd, and two big jump passes. And had we lost that game, probably most people would never heard of the single wing or probably Bob Howard, because I followed a state championship team in 79 at Sigourney, and change was not real well received all the time. And it worked, and we ended up going undefeated that year during the regular season. We got beaten in the playoffs by West Liberty with a little guy named John Oostendorp, who was the heavyweight wrestler and a tight end at Iowa. He was from West Liberty, and they beat us. But that then we kind of took off with a single wing from there. Then the more success we had, the more it became identity. The reason we won really maybe a couple games in the playoffs every few years because of single wing, it was because of the weight training and the speed training and the mental stuff and our multi-sport participation that we had there that we still have here. I mean, it was a culture change was the main thing. And single wing was part of it. And then I liked having the notoriety of running single wing. And there are 50 different versions of single wing. Most people do not spin like we do. It's very time consuming and it takes a lot of practice. But anyway, that's kind of the history of us running single wing.
Yeah, and you obviously mentioned getting to Sigourney Kyoto. You said you take over for a team that had just won a state title the year before, and you mentioned, you know, it wasn't always Sigourney Kyoto when you got there. No. You guys consolidated, or at least started sharing with Kyoto in football in 1987. And obviously, in those times, you know, there was a lot of, you know, consolidations. I've heard, you know, people that were at Applington and Parkersburg and other schools that had sharing agreements, you know, they weren't necessarily sure what's going to happen when these two towns start sharing a program. And what was that kind of like for Sigourney Kyoto?
It worked for one reason. And the reason that people... And I know what my public perception is in lots of circles. Well, he's mean and he's unapproachable.
Yeah.
Well, I go to and down there. I went to school. I went home. I went to church. And otherwise, most people never saw me. Well, and I stood in front of with one side of the gym being Sigourney parents and the other side being Kyoto parents and Sigourney townspeople and Kyoto townspeople who were not in favor of this sharing because we've always fought. We've never got along. I says, you give me 5 years in this and leave your kids alone. I says, I'm not from Sigourney and I'm not from Kyoto. I said, this is going to be Sigourney Kyoto football and it will work and we will be a powerhouse if you stay out of the way. It didn't take 5 years, to be honest. But most of it was because I was a jerk enough or whatever. I had thick enough skin and I didn't have a family at home to be affected by how people thought about me, I guess. And it worked because of that. I mean, shoot, we broke second year I was there. We had to bring the highway patrolman in to break up a fight in the parking lot between the adults, between Sigourney and Kyoto. It was a literally bloody rivalry. And the kids on those, we only brought over five the first year. And those five kids from Kyoto and the Sigourney seniors made it work. And anyway, it was, and they're still together.
Yes.
And most sharing programs, because Sigourney and Kyoto are not consolidated.
No, Kyoto, Kyoto's its own district. Yep.
And most of those don't work. Highland Lone Tree was a great example. They played Emmitsburg in the finals 1 year as a 2A football team, and they went another 6 or 8 years, and then they split because certain adults got on the Lone Tree school board and the Highland, and they didn't like each other, and they were fighting over who paid for the footballs and who and where they and it's hard, and they've managed to keep it together at Sigourney Kyoto, and they're still doing well, which I'm very happy for them and proud of it too.
And I can remember Collins Maxwell Baxter, another recent example of something of that nature. They were not together. Collins Maxwell and Baxter were their own districts, and they had a sharing agreement. They had some good athletics there for a number of years down in Southeast Story County and Jasper County. Obviously, you know, you say single wing really starts to take shape, you know, in terms of being an identity in the late 80s. And then it's not until 1995 that you get your first state title. You win two more in 2001 and 2005. Obviously, it's a lot. Three really fantastic seasons, but we'll start off with the 1995 state title. What's maybe one or two memories that stand out the most to you about that championship team?
The first part of it is the seniors on that group and I think I was coaching. I think I was coaching baseball then.
Mm-hmm.
No, it wasn't either. I was coaching softball by then. But at any rate, we would have practice, and whatever games we had open gyms, and I would wait for the five or six seniors who were working for a concrete company to get there 8:30, 9:30 at night. They came in their work boots and their Levi's, and then we'd be in the weight room till 10, 10:30, 11. Mm-hmm. They never missed. And that group was undefeated in junior high, and at that time I was teaching in junior high. And I never, ever once spoke to them about football. I never asked them how their games were going. I never blew any smoke about them. And they had T-shirts printed when they were leaving eighth grade that they were, I forget exactly what was on there, but basically it said 1995 with a question mark. They had their 5-0 record from whenever it was, 1900 or 1990. And then what they were saying was they were going to be state champs.
Mm-hmm.
And I always ignored that. Well, they had a great vision, and we worked at it too about visualizing and what we were going to do and this and that, but that was a tough bunch of kids, very committed, and that's the first thing I remember. We won a huge in the worst field conditions I've ever been on in my life at Columbus Junction when they watered the field for a couple weeks. It looked like I fell down right off just trying to walk across before the game. It was like a slick frozen hog lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they ran all their stuff to the sidelines. And of course we were running up. Our leading rusher back then was always our spin back, and we did a lot of stuff up the middle. We ended up beating them 29-28 right at the end of the ball game.
Mm-hmm.
And that one I remember, we never would have got to the finals. And of course then the finals, it's in Lore, L-O-R-E, Lore at Sigourney Kyoto. Yeah. About winning that game. Wes Lyon had Kyle Vandenbosch, an All-American at Nebraska, and All-Pro for Detroit, and LeVar Woods at fullback and tailback, and seven or eight other kids that played D2 or above, and a kid named Darren Natchez that went to Stanford and played baseball and football both. But we never should have beat them. We beat them because the kids couldn't imagine losing, and we had 31 yards going into the fourth quarter of total offense. They punted the ball out of bounds on our 9 with 7 minutes and 2 seconds, I believe, left. And we scored with 30 seconds to go and beat them 14-10. So, I mean, it was just, so that was probably what I remember the most about that first year, and that the kids had bought in. I mean, they didn't always like my message, but they did it. And kids that were pretty rough characters bought in, and the training and the adherence to training rules, which was a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
In Keokuk County is a different deal. They have Kyoto Beef Days, which is basically, I mean, it's a lot of alcohol and everything else, and that's the way kids grow up. And it's stereotypical to say they're German communities, but that kind of is what it is. Mm-hmm. Well, the kids bought in, and they disciplined themselves, and so that was what I remember most about 95, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And then you followed up 2001. That was a year where you guys beat Dyke New Hartford, who is led by now Dowling head coach Tom Wilson. And what are some memories from that championship run?
Maybe the most talented across the board team that I've had, or certainly at Sigourney Kyoto that I had. I mean, we had three or four All-State linemen in that team. Dan Hamas, who was an MVP of the what was called the Iowa Conference back then when he went to Wartburg. I think twice he was their tailback, and he was MVP there. One of the greatest leaders slash football players, Derek Greiner, that I've ever coached, is in the Iowa High School Hall of Fame now.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost had to drive to Kyoto to get him to accept being in the Hall of Fame. That's what a leader he was and how he represented Sigourney Kyoto football. And he was our spin back and unbelievable free safety, strong safety all over the field. But they were very, very talented, and that game really wasn't close. And they had beaten us in 98 in the semifinals with Lane Danielson and that crew.
Mm-hmm.
But the 2001 game really wasn't that close. They had our nose man got killed in a car wreck going home from a morning workout to hurry up and get in his car with his dad to go to the state fair. That was the week before football started, and he ran into the back of a manure loader being pulled by his grandfather. It was a horrible, horrible deal. Still is. But that team went through that as well. And then 2001. 9/11. And standing on the practice field the day of 9/11 and talking about, which I always kind of bring in a lot of other stuff besides football, but there was no planes flying.
Oh, yeah.
And it was middle of the practice. I looked up, and way up there, there was three or four jets way up there, and they were obviously fighter jets.
Mm-hmm.
And we stopped practice. Guys, take your helmets off. I said, just on the chance that those jets are leading, and I didn't even get the sentence out. Here comes a great big huge plane, Air Force One,
President Bush.
And there was four more planes behind him. Well, President Bush had flown from Florida that day to Offutt Air Force Base in Omaha, because at that time we didn't know if we were getting attacked, what else was going to happen.
Yeah, you didn't know what else was going to happen.
Chad Minster, who may be the greatest all-around athlete I've ever coached, he was on the 91-92 teams. He was a Secret Service agent by then. He was stationed at Offutt, and it turned out he was on that plane with President Bush. And I'm getting goosebumps right now.
That's absolutely crazy.
So that team that year had a lot of special things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them really great. Some of them really tough. With 9/11, with Clint Cavan's death, so it was just. That's the kind of stuff, I guess, if you coach long enough, you get some of those stories.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And with that, your final state title at Sigourney Kyoto 2005, and I've actually seen video of this. You talk about how after the 2001 team wins the state title, they're having the celebration back home in Sigourney, and the senior class points, I believe it's to the 8th grade class that year, and challenges them to win a state championship.
It was Derek Greiner, who was out in front of an absolutely packed gym. The three receptions were unbelievable. We had the first one especially, coming back in 95, and we came back down through a town called Watchier before we hit, and leaving Watchier, it's a mile out to 92, and there's a hill, and when we popped the hill, all you could see was cars on both sides. We were coming back at night, so it was dark, and then once we got on 92, there was probably 3.5-4 miles of cars that we drove by, and that's something the kids always talk about. Well, we did it again in 2001, and they did it again in 2005. But Derek Greiner spoke to the crowd that night. I always had made the seniors talk whether they wanted to or not.
Yeah.
Well, Derek didn't really want to, but he was such a great leader with our kids and with the younger kids, and when he spoke, and he was talking about all the things that they'd made happen and how to keep Sigourney Kyoto sharing going and to ignore the naysayers, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned around and pointed at the eighth graders who were sitting together in the front row. And the kid that reacts right away on the video on YouTube is a kid named John McLaughlin, who ended up leading the state twice in rushing, and he was our tailback. And he almost recoiled. And it's hard to hear on the YouTube video. But our kids here have watched it numerous times. Our leadership group last year watched it at least once, maybe twice, because you talk about unselfish. And the neatest thing to me, what I was most proud about winning the state, And the older I got, the less it got to be about winning. But you still want to have success and win.
Mm-hmm.
It was, we didn't win it with back-to-back classes. We won it. Each one of our championships were at least 4 years mm-hmm. apart, where it wasn't the same kids doing it again.
Yeah.
And at a small school, that's hard. Mm-hmm. Not to blow smoke about Madrid, but that's what I always respected about Madrid, was they kept getting there. Yeah. Now, they didn't win it all the time, but winning the state takes a lot of coincidences with no injuries mm-hmm. and the ball has to bounce, and Madrid had a couple of challenges with ball bouncing the wrong way in the dome.
I saw a few of them.
But that stuff happens. But to win it with completely different classes every mm-hmm. year at small schools is hard. And mm-hmm. That was certainly, that reception was a big deal about setting up 2005. And then the injuries that John McLaughlin had that year were, he missed a couple games with a burnt leg when we didn't think he was ever going to play again. And he ended up coming back after a week and a half. And then hit the hip pointer he had in the semifinals
mm-hmm.
where he didn't, and we completed 13 out of 15 passes in that game for the team that never passes.
Yeah.
And that was on Monday, and he wasn't supposed to play, and he came back and rushed for 195 yards in the finals mm-hmm. that Saturday, and then collapsed afterwards, and everybody said it was because we'd shot him up. Well, he was shot up with adrenaline.
Yeah.
John was a huge adrenaline junkie, and John, unfortunately, in 2016, he was a master sergeant in the Army Rangers,
mm-hmm.
and his squad team got blown up with an IED, and he lost his sergeant. John lost half of his right hand and had all these injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And, excuse me, we had been emailing back and forth and texting, and our team, that's the year we went to the Dome and here at Webster City, and they knew about him, and we prayed for John in our pregame stuff and all that. So anyway, it was kind of neat linking John McGlaughlin, and John came up here once in the summertime after he rehabbed after his injury, because he made it back into the Army,
mm-hmm.
which was nobody could believe it, but I could because of John.
Yeah.
But he got out of the car after one of the mornings at speed training and starts walking across the parking lot. Most of the kids were gone. I remember Dylan Steen was one of the kids that was still there, and he says, "Oh God," he says, is that McLaughlin? And I says, "Yeah, why don't you guys run over there and slap him on top of the head and see how tough you are?" I mean, that was John. That's the way John McLaughlin was. He mm-hmm. was, you know, just a presence. But he was on that team, and that team was very together and very motivated too. And that team had 26 seniors on it, a lot of whom didn't get to start,
mm-hmm.
but they hung together. So all three teams were a little bit different, and we had a really good game with Sheldon and that guy. I think we beat him 27-24, I think, because mm-hmm. anybody that comes out of Northwest Iowa
yeah.
is usually pretty good, whether you've ever heard of them or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I had student taught at Sheldon, so I kind of knew about them. But no, it was a very blessed time that I got put at Sigourney. And the other thing mm-hmm. at Sigourney is 24 out of the 27 years I coached four head sports. And I always made sure I had at least one girl sport, and usually I had both girls basketball and softball. So, mm-hmm. and we really turned the athletic culture there because we trained the boys and the girls.
Mm-hmm.
They all did the same thing. Mm-hmm. There was no differentiation. And it really helped for everybody not to be jealous about football always getting everything, which is always the
yeah.
story you get,
yeah.
no matter what you give them, no matter what you do as an AD to give everybody that, you know, I usually bent over backwards to have the other sports get more than the football did, because mm-hmm. the football raised their own money.
Yeah.
And even down there, we had a Cobra Club. We had our own booster club. So, I mean, but once we started training together and the girls saw what the boys were doing, if you guys want to get what they get, you got to do what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. And I think the last year I was there, or last two, we won the conference in girls basketball. We went to state a couple times in softball. So it was the whole experience was pretty good.
And with that, you come to Webster City in 2007, and obviously, you know, a lot of coaches that have the tenure that you did, or you know, the predecessors before you, you don't see them leave too often. But you come to Webster City. Number one, what constituted the move, and number two, why Webster City?
Well, the reason for the move was pretty much the same reason I just resigned.
Mm-hmm.
I spent, well, I didn't spend any because I wouldn't stay. I ended up in the hospital middle of the season, 2003. Blood pressure of 190, some over 110, mm-hmm. some for quite a while, and a lot of stress and hypertension, and none of it was generated by anybody other than me. Mm-hmm. And my mom had issues with, like you can say mental health, but with nervous breakdowns and mm-hmm. stuff, and that stuff is hereditary. Back then, we called it coaching burnout because mm-hmm. nervous breakdowns, that sounds weak.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it was. And I spent time at the University of Iowa, hospitals, stress management clinic, which I think is they've closed since then. But at that time, I was one of their, I considered it being a star because I was their second or third AAA personality they'd ever diagnosed.
Mm-hmm.
And the old nurse, and she was awesome. And she says, when they said that, when the doctor come in with all of his minions following, and he says, well, you're whatever. And I kind of, well, that's kind of neat. She says, I told you he'd think that was neat. It's not neat. And so and the doctor told me what had happened to the other two, of mm-hmm. course, strokes and heart attacks.
Yeah.
And they didn't last very long. So I started taking the dog for a little bit longer walks, and I started going out, at least going out to farm ponds during the season and mm-hmm. sitting there. I didn't fish much, but trying to do something else.
Yeah.
But that was part of why. And a big part of why I left was when we went, because we made the playoffs almost every year, and the kids never considered it playoffs unless we were in the dome.
Yeah.
And we had years where we went 8 or 9 or 10 games, and we shouldn't have won 5 or 6 probably.
Mm-hmm.
But the kids outworked, and they had vision, and they expected to win. So part of it was the burnout of I didn't think we were – it was tough on the kids.
Mm-hmm.
The other part was – I'd always known about Webster City, being from Mattard. I mm-hmm. like North Central Iowa. I like how flat it is, all the county roads that hook. If you can get lost up here, you're kind of a moron because every 4 miles there's a county road.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But I always
graded out.
I like that. And the biggest part was, the guy who was the best man at my wedding at Scranton, Mike Sherwood, was the superintendent here.
Okay.
And he had mentioned it before. I said, really, the only way. The way I coach and the way I do things, probably the only way it's ever going to work, I got to be the AD and the football coach too.
Mm-hmm.
And the coach had resigned, and then Bob Jostin retired as the AD.
Mm-hmm.
And then that opened them both up at the same time. And so when Mike called, and I said, well, I'll come and talk about it. And it didn't take too much talking to know I kind of wanted to be with Sherwood. Plus, I wasn't in the classroom anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I had pretty much total autonomy as long as I didn't screw up, which I don't think we screwed up much, to do whatever I wanted within the athletic department, mm-hmm. knowing that there was going to need to be change because he had warned about Electrolux closing, which mm-hmm. it did then the next year. And demographically, of course, that changed the outlook of the school mm-hmm. and our schedules, particularly in football, only have gotten tougher every time we redistrict. The mm-hmm. schedule gets harder, and it's not back from the old days when you're playing in the North Central Conference.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just things change, and we needed somebody. Once again, I wasn't from Webster City. I was going to represent Webster City Athletic Department
mm-hmm.
and hopefully influence all the kids that were a part of it, and I think for the most part we did, and mm-hmm. I think it – we were able to raise the level of achievement, I think, across the board, particularly on the boys' side, in the face of losing the Electrolux and Beam jobs
mm-hmm.
and things changing. And so that's what – and probably I should have started with this. Mom and Dad were still alive and mattered, and that mm-hmm. was the summer they moved from out west of town. They moved into the assisted living down there at the Madrid home, and so mm-hmm. that was part of it too, being closer where I could go visit them every week.
So you come to Webster City in 2007. By 2009, 2010, you've got the program in the playoffs. And in that time frame, obviously, I think a lot of programs, when they have their rise to consistent, you know, a consistent level of winning football, they have a moment in there where, you know, it very much is, hey, this is the moment where we turn the corner. And for what I remember, at least my dad telling me, for Madrid, it was against Wes Marshall in 1988. For Webster City, what was that moment that they turned the corner back to, don't want to say the glory days of yesteryear, but turned the corner to being back into a consistent winning program?
Well, one of the first big ones was homecoming 2007, the mm-hmm. first year. Humboldt was coming off state champion team, and they probably had half of their kids left. And they had been mopping everybody, and we really weren't supposed to compete with them very well. And we beat them that homecoming game.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big deal. And I think we ended up 3-6 that year, but there were close. We were getting, it was obvious we were getting better, and the kids mm-hmm. were buying in to, for whatever, were discipline or whatever, and higher expectations about how you behave and some of those things and how you work in the off season.
Mm-hmm.
The 2008 was the first year we made the playoffs, and that senior class that bought in as juniors the year before, and I always hate mentioning kids because you leave out names, but Carl Peterson, Alex Davis, and now I'm already leaving out names, Roberts, and there's it's a bunch of them. But I think in that class, I think there's 3 or 4 doctors out of that class, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Van de Zandt. I mean, it was just, they were talent. But the big deal is, whatever program, gimmick, plan I brought from Sigourney Kyoto, they were willing to do. And mm-hmm. they jumped into the speed training right away, the weight training. We got a little kickback on the weight training because we went from 3 days to 2. Well, you don't need to be in here 3 days. You don't need to be in here 4 days. You need to make sure you don't miss the 2.
Mm-hmm.
It was about commitment and discipline. And then the other 2 days of the week, once wrestling and basketball were done, were speed training, which they hadn't done much of before, and they bought in. And then in the spring, for lack of a better word, what I call the winning edge classes, our mental training that Ed Thomas and I had worked together on, they did those. They did basically everything that I could have squeezed in. They bought in, they did it. And I think that class really was the ones that kind of had us take off. And then Clear Lake was always our stumbling block because mm-hmm. that was right in the middle of them having their really good program with Fred up there, mm-hmm. Fred Week. And in 2011, we played one of the We played them at Clear Lake. They were ranked 1, we were ranked 2, or we were ranked 1 and 2 on whatever different polls there were, and there must have been 8,000 people there. I mean, it was a huge mm-hmm. crowd, and we got beat 28-27. But that really raised level of expectations,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't mean every year we were going to, you know, be fantastic, but we were able to get it where we have higher expectations now, and this is the amount of work we have to put in
mm-hmm.
while you're out for basketball or wrestling or track mm-hmm. or baseball or golf or the other sports. We wanted multi-sport kids, but I always wanted football to be in their mind all the time. That's mm-hmm. what the football coats are about.
I definitely understand that part. And obviously from that 2010, 2011 time period builds up. 2015, you guys have a 10-win season, and then you follow that up in 2016, making it to the state championship game against Pella. And obviously, I remember, that was my senior year of high school, and we had friends from Boone. And those kids would tell us about, we would communicate throughout the season, talk about the season. Well, our thorn in our side became Van Meter, and their thorn in their side was Webster City. And just what are some memories you have from that 2016 team right. that made the state championship game?
Both of those years, 15 and 16, and actually the 15 team, most of those kids graduated. Mm-hmm. Gavin Dinsdale, who was state wrestling champ and our tailback and one of the leading rushers. He may have been the leading rusher until Cherry
mm-hmm.
this year.
I believe so.
But and the Fuse twins, Moen. Now, once again, I'm leaving all kinds of kids out, but a lot of kids graduated off the 2015 team. Excuse me. The 2016 team, we really didn't know, what they were going to do. Plus, our schedule changed mm-hmm. a little bit, and we had to play. I know we played 2 sophomores for sure because Dylan Steen started as a sophomore at free safety on that that team, and Caleb Olson was our middle linebacker. So we've got a fresh two sophomores right down the middle of the defense. And arguably, and I can say it now because they played so well at the end of the season, the game that we lost at Gilbert was probably because of the sophomores we had down the middle of the defense. But, boy, they sure played well after that. And the kid, Robert Fredrickson, dropped 30, 35 pounds and became one of the best tailbacks I've ever coached. Great natural. And we had Cooper Lawson on that team, who may be the best lineman I've ever coached, and that is saying a lot, because we've had some awful good ones and had some really good ones at Sigourney that started at Iowa. But James Cherry, Ashton High were in that line. So, and once again, I'm leaving all kinds of kids out. And probably the biggest key to that year was Drew Fielder, who was one of the greatest, maybe, and it's hard to say this stuff, but maybe the best baseball player I've been around in high school. He blew his knee in baseball swinging a bat because his cleats didn't move. It was up at Clear Lake. Then the very next year, after rehabbing and getting all his knee rebuilt, he did it again out here the very first game when he was a sophomore in baseball. And he had pins put in his hands in football from a wrestling injury. Then he broke his thumb. The poor kid had all kinds of injuries. And he had been a junior who had played around his injuries on the 2015 team. Then he ended up being our spin back on the 2016 team. Didn't necessarily look like one, but what a great leader. And he was like having a coach on the field. And anytime Drew talked, they all listened. Drew didn't say a lot, but he didn't need to. Great golfer on the state champion golf teams too. Which we always talked about multi-sport stuff, and that one sport feeds another. That mental toughness and stuff they had in golf went right to the football field with him and the Fuses and Vogelbacher and the different kids. But he played the last five games of the season with a cast on his hand, on his throwing hand. So, but we had a little kid named Peyton Canoen who played wing back on that team who threw five touchdown passes on optional sweep, our weak side sweep, and back to Boone. Those were the two toughest games, other obviously Pella, but we beat Boone the ninth game of the season, and then they went down and beat
Creston, I believe,
on a throwback on an extra point. I mean, it was a heck of a game, and we had beaten Norwalk, who was ranked really high, and then Boone came back up here, and we played them the last the quarterfinal game to go to go to the Dome, and it was a hard hitting. I think we won 21-18 or 19, but both of those games were really hard hitting physical football games, and we made the plays to get there and beat Glenwood 6-3 that year.
I remember that.
And
one.
We were down and we were in the if the coach would have been sick and not went to the game, we probably would have beat him 28-3 because I did not do a good job calling offense inside the 10-yard line because we were inside the 10-yard line three times and never scored. So, but anyway, but we played good enough defense to beat him, and then Pella was Pella.
Yeah.
I mean, shoot. I mean, the talent they had, and they were very well coached. Jay's a great coach, Jay McCrenstry, and great guy. But 6'5", 6'5", at both of those ends, and they weren't little stick kids. They both played defense too, and their quarterback was really good. And, of course, I think the DeYoung kid at Iowa, if he wasn't on that team, he for sure was on the 2017 team when we played them down at Pella. But they anyway, they were Pella. They were very good.
Yes.
And we gave them everything they wanted. We led to begin with, and we had a really important penalty right before halftime that was a 14-point swing where we didn't score. And then they scored, but it was a good game, and certainly was another high point of the program.
I want to fast forward now and talk about 2021, this is my first year here in Webster City. You guys, again, played Norwalk in the playoffs in the first round, and that game wound up tying you with Bob Singer for fifth all-time in wins. And I remember Troy Banning, who, of course, was a great reporter up here for many, many years at the Freeman Journal. I talked to you after the game about it, and you brought up your longtime friend, Ed Thomas. And I've heard you talk at length, you know, in interviews on paper and on camera about Ed Thomas and his impact. And just what was your relationship with Ed like, and how did it grow throughout the years?
Well, Ed grew up in Wachier, which mm-hmm. is Tri-County, which mm-hmm. is right next to Webster City, or to Sigourney. Ed went to William Penn, so I shouldn't have really ever had anything to do with him, because William Penn and Central were huge. That was the rivalry back mm-hmm. when I was there. But I got to know, was pretty good friends with Don Knock at Central. Don Knock was from Parkersburg and had played for Ed. And Ed came to Coach Skipper's football clinic and got to know Ed there. And Tom Stone from Pekin was one of my mm-hmm. mentors. Tom was 10 years older than I was, and I kind of followed him around at the clinics and got to know Ed. Well, then Ed and I went to clinics. We went to a couple together, but usually we'd meet up and sit together at the Dome. If neither one of us were playing, we always sat right up in the northwest corner together. And there was certainly not just us. The thing with Ed Thomas is I considered him a very, very close friend. So did a lot of other people, because mm-hmm. that was Ed. Mm-hmm. Ed was an unbelievably great man, great man of faith and family. And that faith, family, football stuff that they promote, that's not mm-hmm. lip service.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time I was lucky enough or whatever to coach in the Shrine game three times. Usually you can only be assistant once. Well, I was an assistant twice, and then I got to be head. The first time I was an assistant, one of my picks, because I knew of him, was Greg Thomas, who mm-hmm. was playing at Tri-County. So that also kind of made the connection with the Thomas family. What a great family. And I got with the tragedy with Ed. And we had went to Emmitsburg once together to meet with Dwayne Twaite. We kind of sat mm-hmm. at his feet, and it wasn't about football. It was about training boys and girls together.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference when we first started coaching, those coaching clinics were so much fun, and it was being mentored by older coaches, the Dwayne Twaites
mm-hmm.
and the Jim Fox down at Davenport Central, and the Tom Stones and guys like that. But it was the collegiality was really something.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things I regret now. We don't have that nearly as much now, because if we wanted to know something, we'd get in the car and go.
Mm-hmm.
Now you get on the internet.
Yeah.
And it's just a different time. But that's kind of where Ed and I got hooked up. And then we started once the internet really got going, then we'd email back and forth. He did a captain's class that was his leadership stuff, and I was putting together the stuff we were doing in our Winning Edge class, and we'd send it back and forth and borrow, steal, whatever from each other, and really got to know each other that way. And then the last few years I was coaching, the last 5 or 6 years at Sigourney and then up here, I'd always get a call in the morning from Ed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how's it looking, what you doing? And I'm sure, I know I wasn't the only one he called. But we all felt special because of Ed. So mm-hmm. it always just bugged me, because if Ed, I wouldn't be the fifth winningest coach. I'd be mm-hmm. the sixth winningest mm-hmm. coach, if that. And if Bob hadn't got cancer, I'd probably be back behind him. I mean, mm-hmm. All that. That's why the older I got, the less the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now, I'm glad I got them. But it's not, and it sounds so corny, it's not about the wins and losses.
Mm-hmm. And it's not. Yeah.
It's if you can use the wins and the losses to influence other kids mm-hmm. that, like what I just had in Sigourney here 3 weekends ago with people lined up to come in and talk, you know, and,
mm-hmm.
and the neat part there was half of them were girls, because I had coached the girls too. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just, it's that you've had influence on somebody, and mm-hmm. that's that, and you hope it's positive.
And but we'll wrap this up. This has been a fantastic almost hour we've spent here. The final question I have for you, Coach, is obviously, you know, like I said at the top of the interview, 47 years as a head coach, you know, close to 50 in coaching altogether. What's maybe the one or two things that you've been the most grateful for in your time coaching, you know, all these different sports you've had a hand in?
Well, overall, I suppose that God, and I believe this, God gave me thick skin and a big ego where I really didn't care. Well, and I do. I wish everybody mm-hmm. thought you were Vince Lombardi and the greatest person ever.
Mm-hmm.
But that's never going to happen. And the more I've taught mental toughness stuff and all the other stuff we've done, human nature isn't to enjoy other people's successes, especially. But he's put me in places where I could be successful, where your message might get bought better and the kids may buy in more. Mm-hmm. You can have more influence. And I believe people have a purpose, and I think that was my purpose. My big challenge now is, what's my purpose
mm-hmm.
now? And resigning was not a, it sure wasn't an easy, and it has nothing to do with wins and losses or the future. And it's going to be tougher because we graduate a lot of kids, but and our schedule is tough, and it'll continue to be tough.
Mm-hmm.
Why'd you really resign? No, I resigned because, number one, I don't like coaching out of a golf cart because my back mm-hmm. ain't good, and stress makes it worse. And the over four weeks I had of blood pressures anywhere from 180 to 100 to 197, over 102 to 120, scared the heck out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had it back in 2003, I was 50 years old, and now I'm 70. So, and I really thought, I'm not giving the kids, and this sounds really corny,
mm-hmm.
that I wasn't giving the kids what I needed to. And when I started really not wanting to get up anymore at 5 o'clock in the morning to go to the weight room,
mm-hmm.
I've never been that way. We used to get up at 4 to be in Kyoto by 5:15 to run mm-hmm. the weights over there. So it's just, I hate saying it. It was time. And my big thing now is, if I can figure out if the stress of not coaching mm-hmm. is going to be worse than the stress of coaching. And hopefully I'm going to be able to get back in at some level someplace, hopefully here eventually.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be right now because I have complete faith that Andy Brim is the one for the job.
Mm-hmm.
And he needs to have it. And I'm going to help him as much as he wants and as much as possible behind the scenes. But it can't ever be in front of the kids
mm-hmm.
because human nature will be, if I'm on the practice field, they're going to look at me.
Yeah.
And this will be Andy's team, and we've got kids coming back, unfortunately. Or fortunately, so is everybody on our schedule. I mean, it's going to be a tough schedule, but the cupboard is not bare. I mean, it's Jackson graduates, and Jackson's big, and Keegan, and Trevin, and Breyer. Their big impact is on defense.
Mm-hmm.
Cale Nixon, Weinzettel, who never carried the ball hard at all this year, Hernacek, Hanson boy, who's a freshman. I mean, they've got running backs. Luke mm-hmm. Esslin coming back at wing back. So offensively, they could be pretty decent, and they'll mm-hmm. be, they'll have. And the neat part is, as I told the kids when we met with them, when I told them first. It's opportunity, and we had a lot of kids this year that were a year away.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're going to be seniors, and what are you going to do during your year, your mm-hmm. 9 months? And having talked to Coach, they're all going pretty good right now,
yeah.
But the other schools are going to do the same thing.
Yep.
So it's going to be interesting, and it's a challenge, and my biggest problem was, I wish it was too bad it couldn't have been in March, but I didn't want to wait till March to let Andy get going with his program
mm-hmm.
because right now I don't have anything to do. March, I could be starting to fish.
Yeah, starting to fish.
Although I could be out there now since yeah. there's no ice.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now our problem is no water.
No.
Anyway.
Yeah. So, Coach, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. It's really been a pleasure. And, again, congratulations, at least, for the 47 years you've had so far. And hopefully, you maybe, you know, we'll see if you got more left in you here in a little bit.
My goal was always to get 50.
Yep.
But 3 years now seems like about 30 with the, because 90% of this is health.
Yeah.
I mean, that was my issue. And it's just, so we'll see. Hopefully, I can get back and we'll see from there. But, I appreciate the opportunity here, and go Lynx.
Yeah, that's a good way to end it. So thank you, head coach Bob, former head coach Bob Howard of the Webster City Lynx here on at 95.7 FM, talking and recapping his 47 years as a head coach here with us here this morning. As we'll step aside and take you back to normal programming here on 95.7 FM.